is given by.
If I were allowed in the competition, I could guarantee you that no graduate student would come in last. No, Dustin Wilkerson was supposed to give this presentation, but Dustin decided he wanted to go pursue a PhD at Cornell breeding willow trees, so he chose willow trees over cotton, I guess. So. Dustin worked on this project for the last 2 years, and I had a lot of interesting information that came out of this. Our objectives with this project, when you're trying to breed for drought tolerance in cotton, at least in Central and South Texas where I work at, if the bar is set too high and there's too much drought stress, you're not going to see much. And if it's set too low, then obviously you're not going to see much on that end. So you have to get into that sweet spot where you can see differences among these lines. And so as we progress into this era of using UAVs and remote sensing and using sensors to try to detect all sorts of phenotypes in the field, we have some critical questions that we need to ask ourselves. First off, when should it be used in the crop growth cycle? How reliable is the data that we're getting? Does it really relate to anything? And is it worth moving into a high-throughput phenotyping platform? Because this, in a lot of cases, this is not cheap and it's not easy to put in there. We certainly don't want to be collecting data that's of no use. And so, if we can answer those questions, then as a breeder, I want to be able to improve my ability to discard unwanted lines. And the easiest place for me to target that would be early generation strains, which we're doing a lot of visual observation and just bowl sampling. We're not taking them to replicated yield trials. And then ultimately, we would love to be able to have these sensors be able to be so sensitive and so indicative that we would be able to move some of these water stress-related traits from, you know, obscure wild race stocks into elite backgrounds and really make progress with drought tolerance. Now, this is estimated average daily water use by cotton. You know, this could change in your location and your varieties, but this is kind of a rough sketch about what the plant needs as it grows in the field. You see, the water usage really picks up when the plant starts blooming, and then as it reaches physiological cutout, there's not much point in irrigating at that point, and really falls off afterwards. But you've got these dynamics, and if you hit a time, particularly where we're at, if it starts raining between bloom and cutout, you may never see any drought stress. And that was one of the issues that we had in 2015 and 2016. That may be the reason why Dustin decided to go breed willow trees. We had two very wet years when he was trying to do this. The material that we were looking at, though, was working with 10 converted race stocks, and these were the wild race stocks were lines that Quisenberry's group had worked on in the 70s and 80s and identified as having some pretty substantial drought tolerance. And I recall when I was a graduate student working for John Gannaway in Lubbock, he had had a few crosses with a few of these lines, and I can still see the plots today. He was bragging about how drought tolerant they were, but my recollection of them, there literally was less than 3 bowls per plant. I mean, it was very yield resistant. Nice, beautiful plants, but just not much cotton there. And so it's difficult to make progress if you were just making a simple cross and then trying to select something out of there. And then for checks, we had 2 experimental elite lines and then 2 cultivars, Delta Pine 491 and Tamcod 73. And we looked at this in 2015 and 2016, both at College Station and in Corpus Christi. And we'll say something about the College Station irrigated trial in 2016. We pretty much lost that because Steve Haig doesn't know how to cultivate cotton nor spray lay-by herbicides. So, yeah, he's kind of screwed that one up. But good tests in both the dryland and the at College Station and Corpus Christi. And it was in a randomized complete block design with 4 replications, and these were 40-foot long plots. Now, Dustin started sampling these about pinhead square and on through cutout, and he actually continued until we started to see the bowls cracking open. But we decided we would go ahead and combine some of the data through this, what we call the squaring period, from where we were squaring up until we started seeing the first blooms, and then from the first blooms up until about physiological cutout or 5 nodes above white flower, and then the third combination was during bowl development. Okay, we used 4 sensors. We looked at NDVI, and this is the Trimble Green Seeker, And this measures the overall plant health and biomass. And just as a side note, this has not a lot to do with drought tolerance, but I got to noticing if I would run this, because you pull the trigger and you walk down the plot and it gives you a number. I started writing these numbers down in my strains trials, or strains observation, in the F4 progeny rows. And the lines that came up with really low numbers there at the end of the season, the way I typically evaluate the lines is I can give it an appearance rating from 1 to 7, and a 6 or 7 usually gets promoted. And if it's a 5, it better have some incredible fiber quality. But more often than not, the ones that were rated 3 or 4, also I would go back and I would look at the NDVI rating. They had really low ratings at the beginning of the season. And of course, you have to compensate for Skippy stands and that, but it got me to thinking maybe I don't even have to look at the plots at the beginning of the year, and I can just go ahead and mow those down, you know, after a couple of weeks, because these NDVIs are already going to tell me which ones to keep. But it's a very powerful tool, and I like this Trimble Green Seeker. The second sensor we looked at was the chlorophyll meter, and this determines photosynthetic capacity, because one of the first things to go awry within a plant, obviously when it gets into drought stress, is photosynthesis tends to decline. So we wanted to see if there was a decline in photosynthesis. We looked at 5 plants per plot, and we always tried to look at the third leaf down from the very uppermost node, because it was a mature leaf, but it wasn't an old leaf. It was a fully functioning leaf at that point in time. And then the third sensor we looked at was using this leaf pyrometer measuring stomatal conductance. And it's also an indirect measure of photosynthetic efficiency. This is not a high-throughput phenotyping. 3 years ago when I first got this device, I remember I was in Thrall, Texas, and it was about 100 degrees outside. In my protocol that I had written up, you know, in my office under air conditioning, I was going to look at 20 plants, all 4 replications, and I was going to do this within 20 minutes. Well, after about 5 minutes, and I was still working on the same leaf, I said, well, okay, I got to go back to the air conditioner. I got to modify this protocol quite a bit. So I cut it down to 3 plants per plot, and looking at the third leaf down, because it takes, it was taking me 3 or 4 minutes to get through a single plant. And I think Dustin, he picked up the pace a little bit, but it's still, it's very definitive, but it's also very slow. And then the last sensor that we looked at was leaf surface temperature. And this is, there's 2 schools of thought. One is, and this was my first introduction, and someone else has probably done it before, but it was by Simmet, by Matthew Reynolds, that you either want a plant that is very hot, which indicates that, you know, stomates are closed and it's conserving water, so it's not going to be pulling a lot of water out of the soil, so it's a conservation method there. Or you want a plant that's very cool, that's got a big robust root system and it's accessing a lot of water. Well, I like to treat my cotton like I like to be treated, and I like to be cool and comfortable as much as possible, and I sweat a lot. So this is what I wanted the cotton to look like, because in my opinion, cooler cotton would be healthier cotton in most cases, because we do have that pretty narrow window in which water consumption goes pretty high. But this also, this is very applicable to put onto a UAV type drone. The years that we had College Station dryland. These are averaged across 2015 and 2016. You see the dryland. I put it on a pretty strong piece of ground. We got a lot of rain, so we got fairly good yields both in 15 and 16. And then Corpus Christi, they had excellent yields there as well. So we got into some years where we got a lot of rainfall there. So that was the growing conditions in which this was done, not ideal for what we were trying to accomplish. And then the genotypes that we were looking at, obviously there was a big drop-off between Tamcot 73, the 2 experimental lines, and Delta Pine 4991, and then these converted race stocks. And this is one of the problems if you get to looking at just straight-up crosses or straight-up materials and comparing them in dryland situations. You're not, so much of the yield performance is going to be masked by other external factors. And so this is one of the caveats there. Okay, when we looked at NDVI and some model data, conductance data, it was kind of all over the board, and I wouldn't make any selections based on this at all. And this is averaged from the very first week that Dustin started taking these until he quit. So these are 8 or 9 observations there. And it's just, there's a lot of noise there. The ones in red were, you know, those were the very best. So we can't even pick out very many poor ones looking at NDVI or stomatal conductance. And then leaf temperature and chlorophyll content was kind of the same way. We didn't see any differences in the morning, which kind of was what you would expect because the plants are good and healthy and they've rejuvenated for the next day and they're ready to go. And even by the afternoon, we didn't see a lot of differences there. And then the absolute chlorophyll content, yeah, that little device, I would probably say that's pretty close to a piece of junk for field use because it's not going to tell us much of anything at all. And then if we look at NDVI and stomatal conductance and leaf temperature and chlorophyll content, when we start breaking those up by growth stages, the squaring, the flowering, or the bowl development, then we start to see some differences there. You see that the NDVI, we saw some differences there in moving up from in 2016, going from squaring to flowering quite a bit, and then it backs down typically from the flowering into the bowl development. And it's not because the plants shrink or anything, but I think it's a function of them running out of nitrogen, which is what you would expect to do and what you'd hope to do because you don't want to be over-fertilizing at that point in time. So you have a decrease in NDVI at that point. And then if we look at correlations between what we're seeing with these sensors and fiber length, who knew that you could select fiber quality from a drone? But you do start to see some differences here because obviously drought stress affects fiber length, and drought stress is measured by leaf temperature. You start to see a negative correlation there. So the hotter it is, the shorter fibers that you're going to wind up having. But the one that we're most interested in, obviously, is lint yield. Looking at the NDVI, we see differences there, or we see some significant correlations there, some usable correlations. And then we also see usable correlations with leaf temperature. Obviously, the warmer they were, the lower the yield that we were seeing. But there's one oddity there. The one in 2016, we see a negative correlation between NDVI and yield. But you have to put this in context. What we were seeing in 2016, we had a lot of rainfall. It was on a very strong piece of soil. And so we started to see a little bit of rank growth, and they were putting more energy into growing vegetatively than they were putting fruit on. So it makes sense that you start to see a negative relationship there. So it's very important that you can't look at this data within a bubble. You have to know the full context of it. So the conclusions from this study, yield comparisons just in a simple dryland situation, they're not going to be enough, I think, to make rapid, meaningful progress in drought tolerance. I believe the NDVI and leaf temperature, that's probably the way to go with these UAV drones. And more importantly, I don't think that we have to sample through the whole growing season. I think if we catch these maybe a week after they start flowering and do it for two or three times, I think that's going to be sufficient. I think that's going to get us where we need to go. And I don't think we're going to be, with these devices with field phenotyping, I don't think we're going to be able to pick out the best of the best, but I think we're going to be able to pick out the worst of the worst, and ultimately that's going to save us a lot of money. And another point is agronomic management is critically important on this. You can't have a lot of skips within your plot. Obviously, you can't let Steve Haig put down lay-by herbicides or cultivate, or pretty much keep him out of your field altogether. But most importantly, we need to be, as breeders, we need to be working with crop physiologists to develop models, predictive models, because that's going to be critical into interpreting this data, because you're simply not going to be able to get one number and make it very meaningful. So we've got to do collaborative efforts there. So with that, Dustin said he wanted to thank his committee members, Dr. Deaver, Dr. Thomason, and Dr. Chad Hayes, the people at the Cotton Improvement Lab, Dr. Smith, Don Dino, his fellow graduate students, those ugly people down there in the corner, and then the undergraduate students, and then also we'd like to thank Don Jones with Cotton Incorporated. So with that, I would attempt to answer questions on Dustin's behalf.